Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 438 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week?
I'm doing great, my man. How about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. Always good when speaking with you. Let's dive straight into the review part of the show. We're going to start here. Last Friday, March the 1st, at the Telford International Centre in Shropshire, United Kingdom. It was live on Channel 5. Let's touch on the undercard firstly, though. A couple fights that they didn't air. Friend of the show, Elliot Wow, now 9-0. A TKO for him in round 2 against Fernando Mosquera, who'd never been stopped, but he was stopped here. Like I say, second round TKO. Fernando Mosquera now 6-16, but a bit of a statement there for Elliot Wow to become the first man to stop him in 16 losses. Really happy for him. Also on the card, the return to the ring for heavyweight Matty Harris. He's back to winning ways. He's 6-1, a points win there against the teak tough journeyman Amin Buscetta, who's now 8-11. Still only been stopped, I believe, just twice in those 11 losses. Points win there over 4 rounds for Matty Harris. Sultan Zurbek as well, he's now 17-0. He had 12 KOs from his 16 wins going in, but was unable to stop Victor Julio was down in round 6 but lost on points over 8 rounds. Victor Julio obviously went the distance in a loss to Archie Sharp back in December, but he was back to winning ways after about 9 losses on the bounce, and he loses again, so he's back to losing ways here. He's now 17-11. Also on the card, the main event, Abbas Barão, now 15-1, a majority decision over 12 rounds against Sam the Savage Eggington, now 34-9. It was for the vacant EBU European Super Welterweight title. Eggington cut above the left eye in round 9. Just seems so long ago now, this fight. Like, it's almost 6 days away, or 6 days ago now. But no, it was a really close fight. I had Eggington nicking the first 2. I gave Barão round 3. I gave Eggington round 4, so I had it 3-1 to Eggington at the start of the fight, but then in the mid rounds I felt that Barão really came back into it. I felt at times he was outworking Eggington, a lot of the time he was on the front foot, and you know, Eggington's not really used to being backed up, and you know, the cleaner, smarter work I think at times was coming from Barão. Gave him round 5, round 7, round 8, round 9. And in the end, basically, I had it a draw. 114, 114 over 12 rounds. I gave Eggington only rounds 10 and 12 in the second half of the fight. So like I say, as the rounds went on, it was actually surprisingly Barão who seemed to take over. I thought that he would be the tired one. I thought that Sam Eggington, with his experience of going 12 rounds on quite a few occasions, would have had a bit more in the tank. You know, he's used to a fast-paced fight. He's used to throwing, you know, loads and loads of punches. But he seemed to kind of gas out a little bit, you know. So a bit of a strange performance from him, a little bit unexpected in that way. I did say on last week's show I thought it was going to be a really good fight. It was a really good fight. Sam Eggington definitely got hurt a few times. That was a bit unexpected. But he's had a tough, hard, long career. And listen, all the best to him. You know, I spoke to him just briefly after the fight, dropped him a text. He took his kid out of school to take his kid to a safari park this week. So, that's a nice thing for him to do there. But no, look, you know, he's a great guy, and I wish him all the best. I don't think that's the end of the road for him just yet, but, you know, Abbas Barrow was always going to be the better boxer, technically, the cuter of the two. But Sam didn't really get his savage on, to be honest with you, and that was the only thing. It just seemed to not be there. I don't quite know why. I haven't spoke to him, you know, about why or anything like that. It was just a real, you know, short conversation that we had, just making sure the guy was good, which he is. So all the best to him, like I say. Really nice guy. But no, all the best to, you know, Abbas Barrow as well. Did what he had to do. Travelled to the UK for the fight, obviously. Even though it was a Sauerland show on Channel 5, you know, it's still away from home, even though he's with the Sauerlands. And yeah, he did what he had to do. And like I say, a lot of people expected him to box and not be as aggressive as he was. And I thought that Sam Eggington would be able to deal with his aggression and overwhelm him like he does, but didn't quite go to plan for Sam Eggington. Like I say, something didn't seem to be there for him. I don't know what that was, but all the best to him. And Abbas Barrow wins by majority decision in what was a very close fight. Moving now to the Hala Widowiskowa Sportowa in Kozelin, Poland. Over here, I'm going to keep it short and sweet, but I'm going to come to you, Eddie. I haven't seen the fight, neither did you, but we know the result. Kasper Mayner, he was 11-1 going in. He's now 12-1. A TKO for him in the very first round. It took him just 45 seconds to dispatch of Adam Kownacki, who put together 20 wins in a row, and he's now put together, this is the fifth loss in a row for him. It was for the vacant Republic of Poland heavyweight title. I think we're in agreement that that has to be the end of the road now for Mr. Kownacki.
Yeah. Once you start to pile up losses like that and stoppages like that, it's just something's not clicking. You know, there's fighters in the past that have had success in their career, and all of a sudden, somebody beats them. And then it's like, okay, well, you know, unfortunate, it happens. But then another person beats him. And then another person. And then he starts to say, wait, something's going on. Something may be wrong upstairs. You know, maybe it's just too much punishment. With a guy like him, he would be in there exchanging with big heavyweight punchers. And, you know, in the beginning, he was coming out on top. He was younger. He was fresher. You know what I mean? But as time goes on, you take that punishment, and eventually what goes up must come down. And, you know, it's come down quickly. You know, meteoric rise, meteoric fall. You understand what I'm saying? And it's looking to be that for Kownacki, and it's just unfortunate. You know, he didn't even get to title contention yet. You know, up to that point, and then now he's just, you know, he's falling off something serious, like off a cliff, you know, so to speak. And it's so unfortunate. You know, I thought at one point he was going to be, he's a tough customer to deal with, you know, throws a lot of punches, you know, tough guy, can take punishment, keep on coming. His pace would really give heavyweights trouble. But it just so happens that, man, once the big guy, the big Nordic guy, you know, put his hands on him and hurt him a couple of times and, you know, got him out of there, it's like it just all went downhill from there, and it's really unfortunate for him. And, you know, I hope he decides to just let it go and stop trying to force it and continue and to the point where he actually gets hurt and puts there, you know, and suffers some irreparable damage. You know, we don't want that. So I think it might be best for him to, you know, hang him up, let it go, you know, and try to find something else other than boxing that gets him what he needs to get done.
And moving now to the Coliseo Jose Miguel Agrelo in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Over here, it was live on DAZN. It was supposed to be the 50th pro fight for Amanda Serrano, but in the end, she ended up, it was kind of strange, she ended up going to the arena with a big pair of sunglasses on, and no one really knew nothing. And then there was rumors spreading on social media before they announced it that she weren't going to be fighting. And then, of course, I missed it, but she came to the ring and announced that something had happened and something got in her eye the night before the fight. And so basically, her fight was off. So everyone came to the arena, obviously expecting to see her fight. And in the end, I think everyone was offered a full refund on their tickets. They also paid her opponent Nina Menke's full purse. And yeah, basically, it would have been a big loss of money for Jake Paul, the promoter. But let's jump to him. He's now 9-1. Another knockout, another first round knockout. That's two on the bounce now. He knocked out in just a round Ryan Borland, who had been a pro since 2013. He's now 17-3. He's had 20 pro fights. Yeah, Jake Paul promised a second round knockout, but managed to get him out in the first. You know, I think I've said it for a while now. I'm beginning to like this kid. I really am, and I hate to say that as a boxing guy through and through who hates this YouTube stuff, but I really think he's gone away from that now. I really kind of consider him to be some kind of, what would I say, prospect. I don't know if that's, yeah, maybe that's what you'd call him. I don't think, I mean, you certainly can't call him a contender by any stretch of anyone's imagination, but I guess in some ways he's a prospect with a massive following. And, you know, you admire what he does because he doesn't need to do this to make money at all. There's much easier ways for that man to make money than get in the ring. But, you know, he's been providing knockouts. He's been fighting guys now in comparison with all the other YouTubers that are, you know, nowhere near their level of opponents, if you know, if that makes any sense. All these other YouTube guys, they're boxing complete, utter journeymen at very best. Whereas he's actually fighting guys with winning records. He's fighting guys who have been a pro for over 10 years. So, you know, you got to give him that. To stop this guy in a round is a bit of a statement. Again, I don't know where on earth this train ends, but it's not going to be with a world title, and it's not going to be with, I wouldn't have fought a Canelo fight. You know, I think Canelo's probably got a bit too much class to get involved in this stuff, but that's what he wants. And yeah, it's clever stuff because he'll make a boatload of money if Canelo were to actually give him a fight like that. But anyway, it's fun, and, you know, I don't really mind it at this point. He's the only YouTube boxer I actually enjoy watching. And yeah, I am going on record to say I enjoy watching him fight now. I can't believe I'm saying that. Anyway, moving now back to the real boxing at the Showboat Hotel in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Over here, former world champion and friend of the show, Tevin Farmer, now 33-5 with a draw. It was a first round knockout for him as well. Not often does he get a knockout. Not often does he get it in the first round. He was able to stop Alan Castillo. And the Castillo's now 27-15 with two draws. All the best there to Tevin. Moving now to the final card to mention. It went down at the Turning Stone Resort and Casino in Verona, New York, USA. It was live on ESPN. Let's touch on the undercard first, Eddie. I will be coming to you in a moment. Nico Ali Walsh, now 9-1, a unanimous decision for him over six rounds against Charles Stanford, who's now 7-6. It was a late opponent change. I think Nico Ali Walsh originally was supposed to face, I think, an undefeated fighter, but in step Charles Stanford on not much notice, managed to go six rounds. Troy Isley as well, friend of the show, looked really, really good actually. He's now 12-0. A TKO for him in round 7 against Marcos Hernandez, who's now 16-7 with two draws. Some people thought that would be a tough fight for Troy. He looked extremely sharp and very, very impressive, and I think he's just improving again and again and again. He's with the right team, Bo Mack and all those guys from the Terence Crawford camp, and I think he's going to be a real prospect or contender or fighter to watch in the future. I think he's kind of moving into contender level as we speak. But yeah, nice guy, good fighter. Great to see him out again. Talking of good fighters, Rohan Polanco as well. He moved to 12-0, a unanimous decision over eight rounds against Tarek Zainer, who was undefeated as well. He's lost his O. He's now 13-1 with a draw. Zainer was down in the eighth and final round, but managed to hear the final bell. Didn't see the fight, but Polanco now 12-0, like I said. Also on the card, Luis Alberto Lopez, now 30-2. A TKO for him in round 8. A defence successful of his IBF World Featherweight title against Raya Abe, who's now 25-4 with a draw. It was his 30th pro fight. He hoped to go in there and take the title away from Luis Alberto Lopez, who I think we've seen improve, you know, improve a lot in recent years. I think he has always had a really odd style. He's a very strange kind of fighter when it comes to his boxing style. He lunges, he throws punches from weird angles, but it seems to work for him. He's got a really good chin, he doesn't mind taking a shot to land one, and he's definitely got heavy hands. Like I say, it's not the most traditional textbook type of stuff, but it works, and he's on a heck of a run now. I can't even tell you how many wins he's put together in a row now, and he's beaten some great names, and he's a, you know, deserving world champion, and he's proven it time and time again. But yeah, he was just a bit too much for Raya Abe in the end. Just overwhelmed him, was just too good, really. Yeah, Abe didn't really come close to, you know, turning the bout in his favour at all. And it was, in the end, I suppose, quite a straightforward win for Luis Alberto Lopez. I don't think he's going to need to be out of the ring for too long before we see him again. I don't think he really got out of first gear. And yeah, the main event, Otabek Kolmatov, Eddie, now 12-1, a TKO for Raymond Ford in the other corner, 15-0 now with a draw. A win there for the vacant WBA featherweight world title. 12th round TKO. Unbelievable scenes. I'm going to come straight to you there. Obviously, you both got the same trainer and coach, Anthony. Happy for the team, the gym. But yeah, unbelievable scenes, considering obviously Ray needed a knockout in that 12th and final round, and he got it with 9 seconds left on the clock.
Talk about drama. That was crazy too. And of course, we didn't know the scorecards, you know, initially. I mean, we learned it after that he needed a knockout to actually win, which I thought the fight, you know, could at that point was close enough to, you know, I would say go either way. But it did look like Otabek was a little bit more, you know, on the gas. He was throwing more punches. But I think Ray's punches meant a little more, and a lot of the landed shots, most of the oohs and ahs would come from those shots. But don't get me wrong, you know, Otabek landed some good shots as well. But it also looked at some point, you know, toward the middle and, you know, even coming up to the end of the fight, that Ray was starting to, you know, have his way a little bit. Early on, it was definitely Otabek that was in control. But as the fight wore on a little more, it got to see where, you know, the walk down method was actually working for Ray, as opposed to trying to box and, you know, be cute with the skills and all. But to be down like that, to need the knockout, and not even just thinking about needing the knockout, it's just going in there with the idea of giving everything, just so you don't leave it in the hands of the judges, and show the balls, the heart, you know what I mean, the determination. You know, you got to get a kid credit. He went and got it. You know what I mean? And got to give Ant credit because he made sure he knew he needed it. Not necessarily that they were, you know, they were sure that they were down. He didn't necessarily give that speech, but it was just like, yo, we got to go get this. We got to show that, you know, we got dog in us, that we can actually take this thing. And, you know, I mean, all of the good shots that Ray landed, I never really seen in the entire fight Otabek, except for the one, which was a jab. And I think it was more off balance than it was hurt, where I saw any kind of reaction from Otabek to where it was like, damn, he's visibly hurt. But he got it in literally the last round, in the last few moments, where it got to the point where it was like, damn, if he would have actually got that credit for that knockdown, he might not have had time. And Steve mentioned this to me, my brother Steve had mentioned this to me. He's like, damn, he's kind of glad that he didn't get credit for the, you know, for the knockdown when he threw him down, because that would have taken just enough time, I think, for Otabek to be able to completely recover. Not recover for the bell to go. So it was kind of good that he didn't give him credit for it. You know what I mean? Obviously the score would suffer, but he didn't need it because he had him hurt and went and got him and got him out of there. But it was just an awesome scene. Happy for the guy, for those guys. Definitely happy for Ant. And he's a deserving candidate, man. That kid really works, really focused, really determined. He got the job done. Happy for him. Proud to see one of these South Jersey guys near Philly, you know what I mean, pull another title win. That's an awesome thing to see. Congratulations to the team, and hopefully we can get more.
Yeah, I've seen another podcast I listened to. They were really praising Coach Anthony's advice in the corner. They said it was some of the best corner work they'd seen in years, which I thought was really high praise. I heard sometimes Coach Ant saying in the corner, you know, who he thought had won the round. And a lot of the time, well, I won't say a lot of the time, but some of the time I was heavily disagreeing with that. But it is what it is. The actual advice itself was really key information. You touched on it, Eddie. You know, Kolmatov started really sharp, in and out boxing. Ford was having his moments and landing some nice jabs particularly. It was that jab that really worked for him. But for the most part, you know, he was being outworked by Kolmatov. He was a bit too patient, waiting too long to get off on with his own attacks. And, yeah, just allowing the pace of the fight to be dictated by Kolmatov. So I gave the first three rounds to Kolmatov. I gave Ford round four and five. But then Kolmatov started just boxing off the back foot and popping out the jab. And when he did that, he was untouchable. Ray's feet were way too slow. He was just following Kolmatov around the ring. He wasn't cutting the ring off. Kolmatov honestly was dominating the fight, in my opinion, simply by throwing more punches than Ford and using his much better feet. And I gave Kolmatov round six and seven. He barely took a big shot at all in those rounds. I gave Ford round eight. I gave Kolmatov round nine and ten. And then, yeah, that is where Ford got cut on his cheek. It was a deep cut as well in round 11 from a head clash. But I did give Ford that round. Then in the 12th round, I actually, going into this round, I actually had Ford three rounds down. And then, yeah, in that 12th round, like I say, final round, Kolmatov, all he had to do was not get knocked out. And he did start to go back to that back foot style where he was boxing off the back foot. Like he'd done earlier on, because when he boxed like that, he was pretty much untouchable. So he had the fight in the bag, in my opinion, and he did the right thing. He went back to that style and decided to just keep it long and use his feet and all the rest of it, a style that we hadn't really seen Kolmatov do before, because he gets a lot of credit for being a front foot, you know, power puncher that likes to come and seek and destroy and stop you. But we've seen him do the polar opposite to that. And he was, you know, it was very effective early on. So he goes back to that in the 12th round. But then he gets caught with a shot as Ray went on the attack. And I can't remember what shot it was now, but he got wobbled back into the ropes. Ray kind of grabbed hold of him and threw him down to the floor. So the referee rules it no knockdown. There's 25 seconds left on the clock at that point in the 12th and final round. By the time Ray gets to punch Kolmatov again, there's 16 seconds left in the round. So he hits him with the first shot. Kolmatov's legs were all over the place. Ray was swinging for the fences, connecting with some shots, missing others, just really trying to pour it all out. And then, yeah, Kolmatov just ends up stumbling into the ropes on the other side of the ring, and the referee stops it. And I thought it was quite controversial, I have to say. You know, 9 seconds left on the clock, Ford behind on two scorecards, needed that knockout. Crazy end to what was a fantastic fight. You know, credit to both fighters. It was a great fight. Happy for Ray, of course I am. But yeah, you got a feel for Kolmatov's people, definitely. I was devastated for him, you know. As happy as I was for Ray, I was equally as devastated for Kolmatov, because he had the fight in the bag. 9 seconds, you know, he wasn't knocked down at any point in the fight. If they would have given him a standing eight, if he would have gone down, he could have afforded, I think, to lose that round 10-8 and still win anyway. He could have just stayed down for the 9 seconds. Like, yeah. But at the same time, I'm also a big fan of the referee shouldn't not stop a fight just because he's heard the 10 second clapper go. But I just think it's a tough pill to swallow in a world title fight. It's a tough pill to swallow when you're an undefeated fighter. It's a tough pill to swallow when you're fighting away from home. So all of those factors go into the fight. And it's a tough pill to swallow when you're winning the fight and you don't need to win that round to win the fight, you know. So yeah, it was. I really felt for Kolmatov, but credit to Ray Ford, because like we say, there was no giving up at all in that fight. There were moments where, you know, he was in his right mind to be disheartened a bit. You know, he did go back to the corner a couple of times, said, "Did I win that round?" And Coach Ant would say, yeah, you won that round." And I'd be thinking, there's no way in the world he won that round. And I think I was probably right, because the judges' scorecards were pretty much what I had it going into that last round. So yeah, there were times where I think he did kind of question himself a little bit, and he asked, you know, his corner for the answers, and yeah, they gave him they gave him, you know, some words of strength to carry on or whatever, to keep going, to stay switched on. But yeah, credit to him, like I say, because he kept going to the final bell, and it just goes to show what can happen. You know, Eddie, I think you can, you know, you're the perfect example. I hate to bring that up, but you switch off with 10 seconds to go in the 12th round. You've been on the receiving end of that.
Yeah, yeah. You got to, at all times, you have to be turned on. You know what I mean? It's
pause,
not,
hard
it's not a
pause. Hard
yeah,
pause.
Paul, I was going to say that. I was going to pause, but I was hoping you didn't pay attention. Damn. But no.
Switched on, Eddie.
Yeah, that's definitely a pause. But yeah, you got to be switched on. I say switched on. You got to be switched on the entire time, because one moment of lapse in judgment, lapse in concentration, you know, lapse in being on your P's and Q's can result in what happened to me. Similar thing happened to this guy. And I mean, obviously with this guy is a little more controversial than mine, which there was no controversy with mine because there was nothing I could say after. You know what I'm saying? Up to that point, I was out cold. So with this guy, I mean, obviously he can make a complaint. I don't know if he had, you know, had it within his right mind to say anything. I think he was really hurt. I think the stoppage might have been a bit controversial, but what I say is the way he was and the way he looked, like say Ray was allowed to continue to hit him, he would have been probably knocked unconscious because he really had no defense. He had his back to the guy. He got hit with a hook and then went down again further. He probably, what you said, Joe, should have just got hit again and got dropped and then tried to get up. You know, take the nine count or whatever, get up and, you know, finish the fight. He still wins the fight. But I really don't think he was in his right mind. I think that last shot did it. And, you know, he would have just been, it would have been overkill in a sense, but not really. I mean, obviously he goes down, they're going to you know, give him a chance to get back up. But man, but I don't know if he would have been able to get up. I think he would have, if he had got hit again, it would have been, you know, over. It kind of almost like it been like a Tommy Morrison, Ray Munch type thing. And you don't want to see that. But, but I don't know about the stoppage. And, you know, I haven't seen anything. I don't know if you have, Joe, anything on where they were complaining about the stoppage was too fast or whatever. Did you say anything about that, by the way?
I don't think so. Not that I pay attention too much, to be honest with you. I'm kind of useless
right,
following things like that.
Yeah, no, I understand. But I was just, you know, because my thoughts on it was that was a little fast, but he was in a real, real vulnerable position at the time. And I think that's probably what the ref saw and slightly hesitant to do it. But he's like, look, I got to do this. I don't want to be responsible if this guy gets hit again and has no defense. You know what I mean? And then if it was a possibility of a standing eight count, it would have been great because then he could have just gave him a standing eight. But there is no standing eight. So if you're going to step in, you got to stop the fight. And I think that's what happens a lot of the time, and it kind of throws the situation off, unfortunately.
Yeah, but like we say, take nothing away from Ray for the great win. He was very quick on the mic to say it might be his last fight at 126, which would be a bit of a shame, really, because like I say, he's kind of gone from contender to world champion in quite a quick period of time. I mean, he's not a massive name, Raymond Ford. I was looking, I think he's only got about 2,000 Twitter followers. But yeah, like I say, he's kind of gone from contender because he hadn't really beaten anyone fantastic going into this fight. And we said, you know, I think I said on last week's show, this guy gets talked about as the best prospect in world boxing. No one was calling him a contender at all. So he went from prospect to world champion. He's kind of skipped the contender stage, and already he's thinking about giving up the belt straight away and it being his last fight at 126 and moving up again. So that would be a bit of a shame for him profile wise because I don't think he's going to get a shot straight away at 130, because obviously Top Rank are holding the majority of the belts up there. You know, they've got a lot of people frozen out and he's with Matchroom, so I don't think it's going to be easy to get their hands on a belt there. But yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with him, but hopefully he stays at 126. I think it makes sense for him to be there, but it's up to him and his body, I guess. But anyway, that brings the review part to a close. It's now time for me to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the undefeated super lightweight contender. It is, of course, Mr. Richardson Hitchens. Richardson, welcome back on the show, my friend.
Thank you for having me again. I appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate you coming back again. So, yeah, man, we last spoke back in September, 6 months ago. It was a couple weeks before the Jose Zepeda fight, which was the last time, obviously, you were in a ring. Talk me through that performance briefly, Richardson. You barely took a punch the whole fight, and you dominated a top-quality contender.
It was a masterpiece. I think it was a masterpiece. I think that because last time was a masterpiece, for the casual boxing fans, they didn't really enjoy it. I understand, and I'm sorry for that, but I feel like for the fans, for the real fans, or the hardcore boxing fans, you've seen a guy that they're still trying to decide if I'm a prospect or a contender, and with a guy that's been on the world stage, majority of the recent years, and gave everybody he been in the ring with problems, gave them fits, and then you have a kid that was still saying as a prospect isn't having shown nothing ever on that level, and I dominate completely. He seemed like he wasn't ready for a step up like that. He was nowhere near in the same level as me. So I think that a lot of fans try to criticize it, but I get it because I'm so great that they try to say like, oh, it was boring. I should have stopped him. I should have knocked him out. I get it. It's just that I feel like I had a game plan and I went in there and executed my game plan. And I got the job done with flying colors.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on it there. You said, obviously, you know, people are looking at you. Are you a prospect? Are you a contender? And the way you beat him, who, you know, we all knew was a real solid contender, obviously speaks for itself. You touched on it there. Few people felt that the fight was boring. I know that you came out on social media afterwards and you hit back at some fans who said that the fight was boring. Obviously, fans, I think, sometimes want to see more of a ding-dong type of brawl. Some fans might not like me saying this, but I actually think it's a good thing for a man as young as yourself to understand that the most important thing in boxing, obviously, is hitting and not getting hit. The fans don't take the punches. Health is your wealth. At what point did you learn that, Richardson? Because, like I say, a lot of young people like yourself, they want to impress the crowd.
I think that early in my career, Andre Ward was one of the first people that I heard mention that. He was like, you know, never fight for the fans because the fans are always going to want to see fighting. But as long as you're winning, that's all that matters. You know, guys like Floyd Mayweather, the guys that you know I came up looking up to, always preached that to young fighters like myself. And I feel like maybe the fight could have been a little bit more exciting. I probably could have pressed the attack a little bit more. But like I said, I came in there with a game plan. Zepeda's a solid puncher. Zepeda was supposed to be a stiff test, and Zepeda never been dominated like that ever. And he'd been on the world stage before. I think way before I even turned professional. So Zepeda been on the world stage, never been dominated. No fight ever outclassed him in that type of way. And I feel like I had a game plan, and I was always taught hit and don't get hit, hit and don't get hit. That's how you dominate. And that's the name of the sport. And I think that was one of the fights where I made a fight that was supposed to be a hard fight, one of my easiest fights to date.
Absolutely, I agree. And back to what I said, obviously, you know, the less punches you take, obviously, you know, health is your wealth. And then the longer career you can have and the more money you can make, that's how it goes. But yeah, let's move on from that. You'll be boxing on April 6th in Vegas against the undefeated Argentine, Daniel Gustavo Lemos. What do we know about Lemos, Richardson?
I know Lemos is a guy that, you know, he's been fighting for the IBF, I guess a little time now. He was the next best available guy, you know. A lot of people don't really know. Like I said, I always had my, you know, there's a champion at 140 now in the name of Sabir Matias. A lot of guys try to say I'm ducking and dodging him. And I've been had an issue with the IBF way before Matias was even champion. So before I even knew Matias was in talk to being champion or anything, you know. So I always had an issue, but Gustavo Lemos was the guy that the IBF gave me eliminator. I said, okay, I'll fight for the IBF to see how my body feel with the 10-pound rehydration clause. And Gustavo Lemos stepped up. He was ranked for, he was the next available guy ranked for the IBF, and he took the fight. You know, I said I'll give it a go. And now April 6th, that we have me and him going at it. I don't know much about Gustavo Lemos. I look at a few of his fights. He looked like a guy built up his career. He built up his career to a certain type of you know, level. He had a good win over former world champion Lee Selby. I think that was probably his best win to date. Yeah. And now he's coming in against me, a world level fighter. So we'll see.
Yeah, you mentioned it there. Obviously, you know, he stopped Lee Selby. Selby did retire after that fight, but, you know, it was still a statement. Still the only guy to have ever stopped him, which was impressive. Lemos, as you said, pretty much, may not be as big a name as someone like Zepeda, but do you think Lemos will be a harder fight than Zepeda was for you?
That's a tough question, because Lemos is younger. Argentine fighters, they're known for being tough, being real tough people. And, I don't know. We never know until we get in there. But I just feel like Lemos never been in the ring with somebody like me. This is the same thing that goes for the last guys that I fought. I keep trying to tell these people over and over. It's different when you get into a fight in the ring with a fighter like me, because you step outside of the TV screen and you look at me and like, oh, he only have a good jab. Or let's just get in his chest and go to his body. And people forget that. Every day in the boxing gym, when I go to the boxing gym, these are the same game plan that people come every day with me. So Lemos, he has a game plan. He's going to come the same way. I've seen 100 guys like him. He's never seen nobody like me. It's easy to, like I said, it's easy to look at from a TV screen and think that it's going to, I'm just a pure boxer guy that's just, you know, just trying to just score points and have defense. But it's a science in it. I turn boxing to a math problem, a science problem. So when he get in there, he's going to figure that out from the opening bell, that, whoa, why is my punches falling short? Whoa. Why is this guy timing? Why is this guy so accurate, so precise? Why he's going to realize that he's in a whole different level. And come April 6th, I'm going to use my God-given abilities and skills to get Gustavo Lemos out of there. I don't see his fight going the distance. And the reason why I don't see the fight going the distance, because I think that Gustavo Lemos is in over himself. Yeah, he built himself to 29-0, so right now he has no other choice but to fight me, because this is for a world title opportunity. But he'll realize he got to start. He got to go right back to the drawing board, and I'm looking to get him out of there, because I feel like he's never been in the ring with anybody close to the skills that I have. I don't even think he even fought a guy and even knew how to throw a jab. So I think that when he come April 6th, he'll see that he's in there with a whole different type of fighter.
And I know that you're ranked with all the sanctioning bodies. Obviously, you said Lemos is ranked with the IBF. He's been boxing for their organization for a while.
I would have wished that it would have been for one of the other sanctioning bodies, because you know, I feel like me fighting at a top level on the world stage, I think that as a professional, you sign a contract. And as a professional, once you make your weight, even if I go over 12 pounds, that's my business. I signed my contract to make that weight. So I want to come in at my best, but the IBF gave me an eliminator, and that's for a world title opportunity. So we don't want to pass it up. We're at least giving it a go to see how I feel for the IBF championship. And if I feel good to fight night with Gustavo Lemos, IBF is going to give me a mandatory spot for the world championship. We'll be ready. Hopefully we'll be ready. Hopefully everything goes well, and we'll have a world title opportunity after my first world title.
And Richardson, obviously you touched on it, the champion being Subriel Matias. That's a guy who's recently signed to Matchroom. So politically, it shouldn't be too hard to make.
No, it shouldn't. That shouldn't be a hard fight at all for us to make it. If everything makes sense, that would definitely be a big fight for the 140 division. I think that's one of the, you know, top. We're definitely in the top five of the 140 division. Definitely, and I feel like, I mean, the 140 division have a lot of top fighters. I can't even, it's so many guys at 140 where it's so many big fights to be made, but that'll definitely be a big fight for the 140 division.
Absolutely, and everyone knows that You're one of Devin Haney's biggest fans. I'm joking, of course. But what did you make of his performance in his only fight at 140? I have to say, I was very impressed against Progre.
It was nothing I didn't expect. Like I said, I've been in the ring with Zepeda. Zepeda was in the ring with Progre. Yeah, Progre got Zepeda out of there, but you gotta look. You gotta look at it deeper than that. You know, before he got Zepeda out of there, it looked like it took a minute for Regis to, you know, kind of start separating himself in that fight. It looked like a back and forth fight. You know, Zepeda had a lot of moments, landed a lot of big shots, a lot of big straight lefts and things like that. And then you also got guys like Shakur Stevenson that been in the ring with Regis that also gave me intel on a sparring session. But even without me knowing about that sparring session, I could already tell that Regis was a way lower level fighter because him and Zepeda wasn't too much of a big difference. It looked like they both were supposed to be in there for the 140. When they fought for the 140 belt, they looked like they both were supposed to be in there with each other. When Zepeda fought me, it looked like me and Zepeda fight 20 times. The fight will go like that every single time, and it might even get worse. So it's like him and he wants to fight Regis again because he feels like he can beat Regis. He's calling for a rematch. You go ask Zepeda right now if he want to fight Richardson again. He don't really want to fight me unless it's big money involved. He don't really believe he could beat me because it's level, sis.
Yeah, but the question was, though, Devin looked really good against
him. Devin did look good against him. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to say, but what I'm trying to get at with that is Devin is on a whole different level from Zepeda. So when you narrow it down, you got Zepeda and Regis that's right there, and then I'm in there with Zepeda. I'm like, oh, shit, like, this nigga, like, Zepeda's really not, like, you know, what they really make him out to be. And I'm like, I know I've been in the ring with Devin. I know Devin is on that level, that high level of boxing. So it wasn't no surprise to me, like, these guys like Regis and Zepeda and guys like that, they're really not – these fighters are not really – they're good fighters, but you got special elite fighters, and that's what guys like me, Devin Haney, and et cetera, are. So I expected that fight to go like that. I mean, it was entertaining, the build-up. It was entertaining. It was good anticipation because, you know, Regis got a good way of talking, and he has that punching power that kind of gives him that punch's chance. So, of course, you're going to – be tuned in, but me watching the fight live, it wasn't like, whoa, like Devin really like showed me, like, no, it's like he's supposed to do that with somebody like Regis. Regis is trash.
And talking of Devin, how do you think he'll fare against Ryan Garcia 3 weeks after your fight? And also, what are you making of Ryan's recent social media posts?
I don't know what's going on with Ryan, but the way he's talking, if I was Devin Haney, just show your ass up so I can get my check. Because he's still not, at this point, he still ain't even talking about if he's going to back out the fight or not. So fuck it. If this is a money grab for Ryan Garcia, show up to the fight, give the fans what they want, take it out and go about your business and handle that when the fight is. I mean, he's still going to have to go through it while he's preparing for the fight. But then he'll have a lot of time to worry about what he's going through mentally. But if I'm Devin Haney, it's like, come on, like, let me know if you're going to come to this arena and fight or if you're wasting my time or not. Because, I mean, obviously Ryan Garcia is not going to – he's not taking this fight as if somebody that wants to win this fight. I mean, from the outside looking in. And it is what it is. I mean, I think that Devin should beat Ryan Garcia. Ryan Garcia is not really I don't feel like the kid is, like, really a boxer. He's a guy that, you know, he built a career up in boxing. Boxing is one of the traits and crafts that he knows. So of course he has a big following. So of course he is a boxer. But I feel like the kid is not disciplined. He's not nothing. You know, there's a guy that when he just got with Derrick James, the guy just said this is his first time ever training outside of a camp. So I feel like you got a guy like that, then you got a guy like Devin Haney that seems to be dedicated to the sport. I feel like Devin should beat him easy.
Yeah, I think I have to agree. But yeah, obviously, hopefully, Ryan is okay mentally right now. Yeah, I want to get your take on another fight that's obviously in your division for a title. Rolando Romero against Isaac Cruz the week before your fight, also in Vegas. Who wins and how, my man?
I'm going to bet on Rowley. I'm going to bet on Rowley. I want to bet on Rhodey because I feel like when you look at Tank versus Rhodey, Tank had troubles with Rhodey leading up to a knockout. It wasn't easy for Tank to really land a punch or get off on Rhodey how he wanted to. He had his moments. He was touching Rhodey, but it was still a fight where Tank had to be patient and still pick his spot. I feel like we're kind of with Isaac Cruz. It was a fight where he was kind of cruising through it and his hand messed up, and you know, it was like he had to deal with the cards he was dealt with, kind of sort of. So I feel like, yeah, he went 12 with Tank, but I feel like Rhodey was slightly a more harder fight for Tank than Isaac Cruz. But I feel like Rhodey really is cracking, and Rhodey was, you know, trying to set Tank up and run Tank into something, because that was the only chance of being Tank. So I feel like I would go with Rhodey, but you know, Rhodey's chin is suspect, and you know, Rhodey don't like the left hook, and you know, that boy Isaac Cruz is gonna come with that left hook, so we gotta see.
Yeah, it's an intriguing one, and I know that you've got training to get to, so this will be my last real question for you, my friend. Joshua versus Ngannou on Friday. We saw Ngannou give problems to Tyson Fury. How much of a chance do you give Ngannou this Friday?
Ooh, you know the crazy thing? I don't even watch heavyweights like that, because I didn't even know Ngannou gave Tyson Fury a problem. I thought this was Ngannou's first boxing fight.
Yeah, he dropped Fury on the deck, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I don't know, because Tyson Fury, like, that don't really tell me too much about the fight, because I know Tyson Fury, because Ngannou's an MMA fighter, right?
Yeah.
I know in Tyson Fury, like, maybe, you know, some of the demons for the past probably caught up to him leading up to that fight. You know, Tyson Fury probably wasn't really training that hard. He probably didn't take it serious. You know, he's done made a lot of money in the sport already. He probably just like, oh, this guy shouldn't beat me, and probably went into the fight and, you know, didn't take it serious. And even if he did take it serious, it's a heavyweight. Like, you can get dropped. I don't know if you're telling me right now, like, because he got dropped, that's why, because he gave Tyson Fury a problem. Oh, he gave Tyson Fury a problem the whole fight. So, I mean, I don't know. If Anthony Joshua's taking this guy serious, he should beat him. And I'm betting my money on Anthony Joshua, so he better win.
okay. Just before we wrap it up, my friend, if you've got any closing words to the listeners, it's always great getting you on the podcast. It's always great hearing your opinions and stuff. But yeah, if you want to sign out with a little message to the listeners, take it away, my man.
Like I said, April 6th, if y'all wanna make some money, go on that FanDuel, go on that DraftKings, bet Richardson Hitchens, put a little parlay in, you know, bet TKO knockout, because you come in for this knockout. Tune in April 6th. It's gonna be a great fight going into the summer. If not, be there in Las Vegas, Fountain Blue. Man, I'm coming for the whole 140 division, putting everybody on notice. They all already on notice, but this is just the one to remind them, because with me, it's like, damn if you do, damn if you don't. If I wipe a guy out 12 full rounds, oh, he's boring. If I beat the shit out of somebody for a whole fight like I did Bowser, then I guess they still not satisfied. So I guess that Lemos, I got to get him the fuck up out of here. So April 6th, just make sure y'all tune in.
There we go. If that doesn't get you excited, I don't know what will. Listen, Richardson, as always, the pleasure is mine. Best of luck for April 6th in Vegas. Thanks for your time, and we'll speak again soon, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate it, my guy.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part. We're going to start here with a good positive piece of news. Friend of the show and Australia's very own Sky Nicholson steps in with Sarah Mahfood for the vacant WBC World Featherweight title. The date for that is April the 6th. It's going to be on the undercard of Richardson Hitchens and Daniel Gustavo Lemos, who we just spoke to Richardson Hitchens a few seconds ago, but it's going to be on his undercards. It's good there that our friend of the show, Sky Nicholson, gets a world title shot. Galau Yafai also defending his WBC international title against Augustin Mauro. And Mark Castro getting in there with Abraham Montoya. So a decent little undercard it's shaping up to be there, April the 6th in Vegas. And moving 1 month ahead to May the 6th, we're going to see Naoya Inoue against Luis Neri for the undisputed junior featherweight titles. So That one goes down at the Tokyo Dome. It's a fight we knew was coming. It's finally been made. It's a Monday, by the way, which is a strange one. But, you know, it is Naoya Inoue, and I think we will watch him whatever day of the week it will be. And also on that undercard as well, we will see Jason Maloney defending his WBO bantamweight title against Yoshiki Takai as well. So all the best there to Jason Maloney. I don't know if any other fights have been announced for that undercard, but that is that. Moving on to the preview part, there's only two cards to mention. Let's start with a small one first. It goes down on Saturday, March the 9th. At the Winter Gardens in Blackpool, Lancashire, United Kingdom. Friend of the show, Bradley the Sting Ray. He's currently 16-1. He gets out on this card here. It's over six rounds for him at super middleweight. He gets in with Patrick Polasek, who is 2-16 with a draw. Should be a nice, easy little run out there for Bradley Ray. All the best to him. And yeah, moving to the big card. It goes down tomorrow, Eddie. Friday night fights in the UK, it's going to be terrible for people in the US. I've just realized, especially people like yourself, you know, on Eastern time, it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be slap bang in the middle of the day for people like you. So it's a bit of a mad one, actually. But yeah, anyway, Friday night in the UK, Friday night in Saudi, but it's going to be early afternoon in the US. And it's gonna the undercard will probably start morning time in Vegas, which will be really weird. But anyways, let's get to it. Couple fights to mention on the undercard first that I just want to run through. We're gonna see Jack McGann, who's 9-0 with a draw. He gets in there with Louis Green, who's 16-4. Could be an upset on the cards there, I think. Spoke to Sam Gilley, who is obviously a man that shared the ring with Louis Green a few months ago. He's really unsure of how that one's going to pan out. And I just got a feeling that Louis Green might win that one. Could be an upset there. I think he's about a 2-1 underdog. We're also going to see Justice Hooney, 8-0 in a 10-rounder against Kevin Lorena of South Africa, who's been helping out in Tyson Fury's training camp in the build-up to this Usyk fight. He's 30-2. We're going to see Israel Madrimov, 9-0 with a draw, fighting for the vacant WBA World Super Welterweight title against Magomed Kurbanov, who once upon a time got a gift decision against Liam Beefy Smith. He's 25-0. We're going to see Mark Chamberlain, 14-0, stepping in the ring with Gavin Gwynn, who's 17-2 with a draw. Gavin Gwynn looked awful last time out. Mark Chamberlain didn't look great. Both guys facing off here over 12 rounds. No belts on the line, which is interesting, but I wouldn't mind seeing the winner get in there with Sam Noakes. But yeah, Mark Chamberlain's quite a big favourite. You can get about, I think, just over 2-1 for him to win by knockout. Gavin Gwynn looked like he was going to get knocked out in his last fight against the 47-year-old Italian. And I think that there's a chance Mark Chamberlain could stop him. I would favour Mark Chamberlain. I think he's going to be a bit too strong and probably hits a bit too hard. But yeah, I think he could get a stoppage. I think there's some really good odds on offer here this weekend for this card. Also on the card, defending his WBC featherweight world title, Ray Vargas, 36-1. He steps in with the UK's Nick Ball, 19-0, coming off a great win last time out against Isaac Dogbe. Really interesting fight, terrible odds. Nick Ball's a massive favourite, even though his best win is Dogbe, and a lot of people would say that Dogbe is not the same fighter at featherweight as he was at Super Bantam, and that he, you know, isn't in the best of form, even though he's a former world champion. Ray Vargas has only got one loss, and it was to Oshiki Foster. And by the way, everyone talks about Nick Ball's, you know, knockout power and all the rest of it. Ray Vargas has obviously fought much better opposition than Nick Ball has, and also has a higher knockout percentage. So I think some people are reading into Nick Ball a little bit too much here. I would not be surprised if Ray Vargas were to upset the odds, even though in a lot of people's minds, they don't understand why he is the underdog. But yeah, Ray Vargas, he's much taller, much more experienced, better knockout ratio. It doesn't make much sense. He's not always the best fighter to watch, but Nick Ball's the polar opposite. He's always exciting to watch. So it's going to be interesting to see how the two styles clash. But all the best to Nick Ball. It'd be great if Britain can get a new world champion here. And he's a very exciting fighter, but it's a tough fight. I think it's a very tough fight, so I'm not overly confident in Nick Ball winning, but hopefully he can do it. But Ray Vargas, I've always rated him pretty highly. A lot of people don't, but I think he's a very good technical fighter. Moving to the two big fights, Eddie, I'm going to come to you first with the Chiefs support. Zhilei Zhang, 26-1 with a draw, from China, but these days residing in New Jersey up by you. So that is pretty interesting. He's back in a 12-rounder here for the WBO Interim World Heavyweight title. He steps in with Joseph Parker, who's coming off the best win of his career when he upset the odds. And God knows how that fight went the distance. I thought someone was going to get knocked out. But Joseph Parker, of course, beat Deontay Wilder. We had him on the show last week. Fantastic guy. 34-3 Parker these days. Just turned 32 as well, I think, last month. I tell you what, I've been thinking a hell of a lot about this fight for weeks, and I'm favouring Parker even though he's about a 2-1 underdog. Let's keep it pretty brief, Eddie, but what's your thoughts on that fight there, Zhang and Parker?
Great fight, actually. Good contrast of styles to be honest, Parker could box, but he also could come forward, so he has, options within that fight. I think with Zhang, though, he needs to be a little bit more on the back foot, box a little more, in and out kind of, make Zhang work so that in the second half of the fight, he could kind of, wear him down a little bit, make him work a little more than he wants to work. So in the second half of the fight is a little easier, I would think, or at least maybe you can even move toward stopping him. I don't know. Zhang seems to be really tough and have a strong chin. Obviously, was in there with Joe Joyce and able to deal with what he was throwing. So it proved to be too tough for Parker in the past. So, I don't know, man. I think it's a very, very interesting fight. And I understand why you favor Parker, because he does have the ability to beat Zhang. If Zhang is too stationary and if he's looking for one punch, he may struggle, because Parker does have a good IQ. He does understand counter punching and where he needs to be, and he understands his role in a fight like this. So Zhang has to be. Zhang has a great amateur background too, and he's not just a puncher. He's also pretty good boxing as well, but he's more of a seek and destroy kind of guy, looking for one or two punches at a time, maximum two. It's going to be interesting. It's whether or not Zhang can land his shot and kind of get Parker in a position where he can maybe get him out of there. But if we're going to the cards, I got to favor Parker too. But like I said, Zhang is a good boxer, so he's not terrible. He's not a terrible boxer. He's just the kind of guy that looks for a punch, and we can't forget he's a southpaw. So you gotta factor that in too. So yeah, very interesting fight, man. I'm looking forward to that too.
Yeah, I just can't see Parker getting stopped for some reason. I know that he got stopped by Joyce, and Joyce got stopped by Zhang on two occasions, and triangle theories don't work. I just can't see
him. I was about to say that.
But Parker, I just can't see him get stopped by Zhang. I know he got stopped by Joyce, like I say, and there's Joe has not really came out and made excuses, but I know that he told me something. I'm not going to come out and say it, because obviously he hasn't come out and said it, but he wasn't 100% in that fight. That's all I'm going to say. A lot of people don't know that. I don't know if it really played a factor in the end. But, he did get stopped by Joyce. But I styles make fights. I think he's going to be... The most important thing in this fight is that I think Joe's feet are so much faster than Zhang's feet. That is the massive, massive difference between these two fighters for me. And Joe has been using his feet so much more in recent times since he's been under Andy Lee. Prior to that, a few fights ago when he was still with his old trainer, Kevin Barry, he was kind of just standing in the pocket, standing in range, and it was like I'm going to hit you, you're going to hit me, and whoever's got the best chin and who can withstand the most punishment and dish out the best punishment back will win. there wasn't much thinking behind his game, and he really went downhill for a period. You know, like he was in tough fights with people like Alex Leopai, who we saw Malik Scott box his ears off. So I just don't know what happened in that period of his career. But then he left his trainer, got with Andy Lee. All of a sudden, he's really doing a lot more moving, looked great against Simon Keane, looked fantastic against Wilder. And I just think it's clicking. It's all clicking for him. He's, you know, still 32 years of age, way younger than most people thought. And I just think he's kind of like in his prime now. Very, very nice guy, very honest fighter. I really like Joe. But like I say, I just think his foot speed, his hand speed, that's going to be the difference in this fight. I was talking as well about this fight to Michael Hunter the other day, and he was saying, like, because Joe had said on the podcast last week that Zhang used to have issues with his gas tank. He'd get tired as hell after just like two rounds. But that seems to not be a problem anymore. And he seems to have quite a good gas tank now. And I was talking about that statement with Mike, and Mike was saying, like, he hasn't really been in a fast-paced fight, because that fight with Joyce, both fights with Joyce, they weren't fast-paced fights. And I thought about it, and I thought, yeah, maybe he's got a point there, because Zhang used to really struggle with smaller guys. We've seen him, you know, cause so many... We've seen him... having multiple problems with much smaller men. But when he's got in there with the bigger guys like Joe Joyce, same size as him, slow as well, he's much more comfortable, you know? He's much more comfortable. With the smaller guys with the quicker hands, he really struggles. And that is where, you know, it's going to be a faster-paced fight than what he's comfortable with. And that is where he has to think more. And that is where that 40-year-old body and mind is going to, you know, encounter issues. And I think if Joe can box and move, he can win this fight. I don't want to say relatively easily, because that might be a stretch, but I think he can win this fight, you know, well. If he does get caught in the pocket with Zhang, it's going to be dangerous. But I do think that Joe's got a good enough chin to take a few good shots. But obviously, you know, Joe Joyce has got a fantastic chin, and if he can't take the shots, then I don't think no one can. But yeah, I think, you know, Parker he's got a good enough chin to get him out of jail a couple of times, but not all night long. And I don't think his chin's going to be there to hit all night long. You know, we've seen him, you know, avoid the right hand of Deontay Wilder for 12 rounds or 10 rounds, whatever their fight was, and he did that unbelievably well. I know that Zhang is a completely different stance and everything, but he's a lot slower and he's a lot more conventional. So I think I'm just really confident of Joe winning this. That's all I'm going to say. Let's move on, because we've given it a lot of time. Let's get straight to the main event now, Eddie. Anthony Joshua, 27-3, coming off a confidence building fight last time out against former foe and sparring partner Otto Wallin. He managed to go in there and get a stoppage in the first half of the fight for the first time in, I think, about 7 years. That statistic I was rolling out every AJ fight, I now have to stop mentioning. But yeah, he gets in with Francis Ngannou, who is coming off a confidence-building fight as well, despite losing to Tyson Fury. He put the champion on the deck. He's going to be full of confidence. He thinks he won the fight. And I don't think he's going to fear Anthony Joshua in any way. Very interesting fight. I saw someone make a point the other day, Eddie. It was actually Spencer Fearon who made the point. He said, what punch did Dillian White catch Anthony Joshua with and trouble him? Left hook. What punch did Andy Ruiz keep clocking Anthony Joshua with, hurting him, dropping him? Left hooks. And what punch did Francis Ngannou put Tyson Fury down with? And it's a left hook. And that was it. He kind of wanted to leave that out there. Interesting, Eddie. Interesting. I think both men can obviously really punch. There's no doubt in that. I think Anthony Joshua will be a bit weary. I think Anthony Joshua, you know, this isn't an Otto Wallin here, a man he knows well. I think he's going to be a bit worried. He's seen what this man did to Tyson Fury. You know, had him in lots and lots of trouble throughout that fight. It wasn't just one round that he was in trouble. I watched the highlights of it just today, and I was shocked at how hard a fight that was for Fury. Still can't quite believe it. like we said many times before and on this podcast, Eddie, styles make fights. Doesn't mean it's going to be a competitive one like it was with Fury. But I still am not 100% sure in Joshua. I think he will win, but stopping Ngannou is going to be a tall task. And also, if he does end up wearing a shot himself from Ngannou, which I feel like he undoubtedly will at some point, that's going to be really interesting to see how he takes it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. This fight is really up in the air as far as like how it can end, because there's multiple different ways the fight can end. I see Anthony Joshua probably winning the fight without a doubt. Not probably, I shouldn't say it like that. I think he will win the fight. I think his skill level, a couple with his strength and athleticism, will give him enough of an edge, obviously, with the skill. I mean, all that, a couple with the skill and more information in boxing and more experience in boxing and being even at the Olympic level, I think that will be what's going to set him apart. I think with Tyson, he has obviously the skill level and even amateur background, all of those other things over him as well. But I just think that normally Tyson's size, and I think he's kind of leaned on that a lot in the last few fights with Wilder that he was in, where he could just use his size and kind of bully a guy and wear him down like that. Whereas with Ngannou, that wasn't possible because he was too strong. You know what I mean? He was able to move mountains. You know, you could be as heavy, try to be as heavy as you want. It seemed like he wasn't going nowhere, and he wasn't gonna be bullied. So, you know, I think though with AJ has a little bit more maybe physicality, a little more strength, you know, a little more just overall, like I said, I don't say physicality. I think Tyson, to be quite honest, is more physical and more, you know, it could be a little even dirtier at times than what Anthony Joshua is. But I think he has enough explosive power to get more respect than what Tyson got in that fight. You know what I mean? So I think that Ngannou will, and what I like about what you said, Joe, was that he's undoubtedly at some point going to land a shot. And it will be extremely important for me to see just how Anthony Joshua deals with his offense when he's coming forward and throwing shots and landing shots. Will he be able to deal with it? Because from what I understand, this guy punches harder than everybody. You know what I mean? He's recorded the hardest punch in history and all that crap. But, and then he also put Tyson down. So, there's a lot of things up in the air about what Ngannou could do as far as punching power. And to be quite honest, he didn't look like he didn't belong in a boxing ring. So he does have enough skill to compete. Obviously, with one of the most elites that we've seen as far as Tyson Fury, he was able to compete. So I don't think that was a version of Tyson Fury that we'll see in a more serious type high-level fight. I don't think he was fully himself, but regardless of that, I think Ngannou gave a good account of himself. And if that is true and is all real, and even if, say, Tyson was a little bit, it was definitely in better form than I'm giving him credit for, and Ngannou's just that guy, well, it's going to be reflected in this fight. We're going to see it, because Joshua, I think he looked pretty damn good in the fight he had with Otto Wally. And like you said, though, Joe, he was really comfortable with him. He sparred with him. He kind of knew what he was getting into. So maybe that was a big part of it and why he looked so good. But with this one, there's a ton of uncertainty. He doesn't know what to expect. He only has one fight to really watch and dissect to figure out what he's going to be seeing on fight night. And, you know, like he's still, you know, Ngannou is still pretty much unknown commodity. It's like we don't know what we're going to see. It's a different style, just so many things. But I tell you what, I'm just like another fan. I want to see it. I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm hoping it's on Friday. So it's Friday, right? If I'm not mistaken, yeah, I don't want to get this wrong. That's great, because now I actually have an opportunity to be able to see it. So thank goodness. But if it was a Saturday night thing, it might have been tough, but I can watch on a Friday. So I'm just looking forward to it, man. I'm picking Joshua. I'm thinking he's going to win probably if he's able to wear Ngannou down. It could be a late stoppage. It's hard to see him getting stopped. He just seems so tough. But, you know, if he gets tired and gets worn down, you never know. And like I said, Anthony Joshua is an explosive puncher. So we'll see. But very interesting fight. Looking forward to it.
Very interesting fight. I echo that, Eddie. Well, there we go. That brings part two to a close. There's nothing more to add from me. Cannot wait for tomorrow. Cannot wait. It's going to be an exciting card. In part one, we did the review part. We welcomed our special guest. Then in part two, we did the news. Then we did the preview part just there. It's now time for me to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 438 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A massive shout out to this week's special guest, the undefeated super lightweight contender, Mr. Richardson Hitchens. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. That is about everything, though, from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Enjoy tomorrow, and we'll see you all again same time next week.